Today's listener essay is by Beth Mannion.
While I was growing up, I often felt trapped inside my head. I couldn't understand why I cried so much and why I felt so sad all the time. When I started college in 1987, I was beginning to experience symptoms of bipolar disorder. As a cellist and music education major, I was disciplined and I worked hard. Yet sometimes I would become so depressed I could barely function. I couldn't get out of bed, I missed classes, and my grades suffered. I cried until I thought my heart would crack. But let a few months go by, and I'd be flying the hypomanic spaceship, laser-focused and excelling in my classes, with enough energy to power a small town. Hypomania is a milder form of mania, and mania, put very simply, is the euphoric opposite of depression. During my junior year, I experienced a mixed episode in which symptoms of depression and mania exist simultaneously. The severe depression, sleeplessness, intense irritability, and blood-pulsed anger which characterize a mixed episode made me want to gnaw my arm off. My behavior became increasingly erratic and out of control. Despite my vociferous protest, I conceded to go to the hospital and was admitted to a locked psychiatric unit. I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and was given a mysterious medication called lithium. I never thought I'd be ingesting something that's listed on the periodic table. Slowly, the storm that had been raging in my brain began to calm. When I returned to campus, I felt so much better that I considered myself cured, and I made the very unwise decision to stop taking my medication. Inevitably, things began to fall apart. I missed my college graduation because I was in bed, in a heap, depressed, again. I was back on the bipolar roller coaster, experiencing the ups and downs that would continue to make my life unravel. I was becoming increasingly terrified of the shape-shifting world I was living in. During my 20s, despite worsening symptoms and pleas from my doctors and therapists, I refused to resume taking a mood stabilizer. In my view, taking a mood stabilizer would cement my diagnosis and label me as mentally ill. Stigma trumped treatment, and I would pay dearly for it. In time, my mind soared far beyond hypomania, and I had my first manic episode. I was enwrapped with a cosmic sense of euphoria. I possessed superhuman energy despite getting little or no sleep. Thoughts raced and bounced off of each other. Prisms of shimmering light filled my mind, creativity flowed, and everything in the universe seemed profoundly connected. Life was so unbelievably beautiful until my brain shattered into a confused, frenzied nightmare. I began to experience symptoms of psychosis. My psychiatrist ordered me to the hospital. After I was discharged, I crashed and found myself immersed once again in the agonizing numbness of depression. I slept for days on end. The floor was covered with unopened mail. I didn't shower. I didn't eat. The red light on the answering machine flashed with unanswered calls as I isolated myself from the people who cared about me. There were periods of peace between episodes, during which I was able to build a successful teaching career and form friendships and romantic relationships. Yet all the while, my illness continued to build up steam, and the episodes became more frequent and more severe. Things were about to implode. In 2003, I became so severely depressed that I attempted suicide. I did it because I wanted the pain to end. That's all. When I woke up the next day, I was angry that I was still alive. I could feel my heart beating. I could feel air filling my lungs. But this was no life. I was just taking up space, and it all seemed so pointless. While I was in the hospital, I was notified that I was being asked to resign from the teaching position I had held for 8 years. I was filled with a shame so deep it would take me years to get over it. I had already lost my mind. Now I was losing everything. Over the next decade, I retreated into a world of solitude and struggle. I avoided forming new relationships, since I saw myself as damaged goods. I spent most of my time alone, in my dreary, rented room, sinking deeper and deeper into my illness. Slowly, my heart became a dark, dried-up husk. The recovery process has been painful and exhausting, yet at the same time freeing and life-affirming. I am now able to accept the fact that I have bipolar disorder. Acceptance is not approval. It is letting go of judgment and making room for this illness in my life. It is a day-to-day, sometimes minute-to-minute practice. I am fortunate to have access to quality mental health care, which affords me regular visits to my therapist and psychiatrist. I resumed taking a mood stabilizer, and it has proven absolutely essential to my recovery. I never skip my medication. And I am committed to my work in therapy, where I've grieved the losses I've experienced as a result of this illness, and where I continue to learn to cope and live more effectively with bipolar disorder. I know from experience that recovery is possible and recovery happens. It's an ongoing process with setbacks and frustrations. Very recently, I had another episode. The good news is I hadn't had one in almost a year, and this episode was far shorter and much milder than any I'd had in the past. It didn't bring my life to a halt because the symptoms were less impactful and more manageable. That's progress. Today, my life is fuller and more meaningful than I could have imagined just a few years ago. And this month, I returned to work for the first time in 5 years. It has been quite a journey. My friends and family have stayed with me through my darkest days and highest highs. I think it's safe to say that it has not always been easy for them. I once worried that they'd get tired of dealing with me and what was once my bipolar mess. But I've come to trust that they do not view me as an assortment of symptoms. They see that I am a daughter, a sister, a friend, an aunt, an artist, a teacher, and a pretty good baker. Through the euphoric disintegration of mania to the darkest, most hopeless depressions, my family and friends continue to be a healing presence in my life. 1 in 4 people in this country lives with a mental illness. As a society, let us work to remove the stigma which surrounds mental illness and which discourages so many from getting treatment. Mental illness is an illness like any other.
Beth Mannion is a mental health advocate, writer, and public speaker whose work focuses on increasing awareness of issues surrounding mental illness. She is a member of the board of directors of the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Western Massachusetts. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.